and welcome to this new episode of Radio Linguistica, DGT's radio podcast. This broadcast is made by translators for translators, exploring themes and topics that are relevant to our everyday work. This is your radio broadcast, so do let us know what you would like us to talk about. You can write to us at dgt-radio@ec.europa.eu. That's dgt-radio@ec.europa.eu. I am Caroline, the new host of this show, and I am delighted to welcome today Anna Kaiser-Lepik from DG Echo. Anna, thank you very much for joining us. You are responsible for the communication on Ukraine in DG Echo. What exactly do you do in DG Echo?
Hi, Caroline.
Hi.
Indeed. Well, thanks a lot for having me. So, hello, my name is Hannah. I am basically the communication focal point for all things related to Ukraine at TG Echo. So my work involves everything from drafting press releases to creating social media content, to liaising with the people on the ground. And I mean, in general, the whole point of my job is really getting the message across to the EU general public of what the EU is doing in terms of its humanitarian response and civil protection assistance in this Ukraine crisis.
Okay, right. Anna, since the beginning of the war in Ukraine, over 13 million Ukrainians have had to flee their homes. Over 6 million of them, mainly women and children, have sought refuge outside their country and mostly in European countries. Now, the EU does a lot to help civilians inside and outside Ukraine, but we know little about it, even among us, translators in DGT. We translate all kinds of commission documents about Ukraine, but it's difficult to get an overall picture. So thank you, Anna, for helping us getting an overview of what the EU is doing concretely to help the Ukrainian population. First, can you describe the humanitarian situation in Ukraine? How bad is it?
So ever since Russia launched its attack against Ukraine on February 24th, the humanitarian situation has really become catastrophic in Ukraine. Currently, it's estimated that 15 million people need humanitarian assistance. And of course, the situation is much more worse in the eastern and southern parts of the country, where because they are under heavy fighting, heavy shelling from the Russian forces. And this, of course, also severely complicates the delivery of humanitarian aid. And we still see that millions of people don't have access to water, to electricity, and also the food supplies are running critically low. But this is really where the EU humanitarian aid steps in. Despite all the security constraints, our humanitarian partners managed to deliver the aid and even to the most hard-to-reach areas.
Okay, so can you just say, who are your partners? Who are you working with in Ukraine?
So we work with the UN agencies. So, for example, UNICEF, the World Food Programme. We also work with the Red Cross and its national societies, but also European NGOs. For example, in Ukraine, we work a lot with a Czech NGO called People in Need.
Okay, right. I've heard about them. Yeah. And so what do they provide? They provide water, they provide food, they provide electricity?
Well, the aid really ranges. In Ukraine, so they can deliver the assistance, really like physical assistance in terms like with trucks and trains to provide food and really to meet the immediate needs of the people. But we also have a cash assistance program, which is a very efficient way to support the people in Ukraine. And also we have, for example, we have a cash assistance program in Moldova as well by Caritas. And they provide one-off cash payments of 112 euros to the most vulnerable people, for example, pregnant and single women or people with disabilities. And this really helps a lot the refugees, you know, that sometimes just come with like a suitcase. They don't have anything. And cash assistance gives them like a freedom of choice as well. So they can choose like where to spend the money, like what are the most like crucial needs for that person, particularly. And it's also a chance to contribute to the local economy of the host country.
Okay. So apart from Ukraine, you were mentioning Moldova, so you're also giving humanitarian aid in Moldova. Are there other countries that you help?
So in principle, the EU humanitarian aid only funds projects outside of the EU. So we don't have projects inside of the EU because, I mean, humanitarian aid, it's really responding to crisis in globally. In response to Russia's war in Ukraine, we are working in Ukraine, of course, but also in Moldova. So those two countries.
Okay, right. You were mentioning UNICEF that was helping children. How do they protect especially unaccompanied children? I'm thinking of children, you know, who are without adults, without their parents. How can they help?
So, of course, UNICEF, we have a project with UNICEF in Moldova, near the Balanca crossing point, so they could like welcome the refugees entering Moldova from Ukraine. And as you said, I mean, children are actually one of the most vulnerable refugees in terms of like all the threats that the refugees are facing. In general, a lot of children can be unaccompanied or separated from their parents, so they do need special attention. With UNICEF, we have a project that provides child-friendly spaces so they can like play and engage in different activities, but also to provide information, referrals, and protection to them.
Okay, right. Now, I know that aid is also sent to Ukraine, to Moldova, and to other countries through a mechanism which is called the EU Civil Protection Mechanism. Can you tell us about it? What is it exactly?
So the EU Civil Protection Mechanism, basically, it means that if a country is facing a crisis that it is unable to solve on its own, it can request assistance through that mechanism. This can be used in times of like earthquakes or even during pandemic when the country itself can't take care of that crisis anymore on its own and it needs assistance. So that means that other countries can step up and offer in-kind assistance from their own stocks to the country in need. Everything is coordinated by our emergency coordination response coordination center here in Brussels. It operates 24/7. And for example, in the case of Ukraine, Ukrainian authorities already activated this mechanism on 15th of February. So, roughly 10 days before the war actually started, because they were requesting assistance due to the threat of further escalation. And as you mentioned, through the EU Civil Protection Mechanism, we are also supporting the neighboring countries like Poland, like Moldova, Slovakia, Czech Republic in providing assistance to them as well, because the inflow of people is rather massive there.
Okay, so the mechanism started working on the 15th of February. Is it the first time that the civil protection mechanism is being used, or?
No, we have a long history of using this
Okay.
mechanism. But for the Ukraine crisis, indeed, it was activated on the 15th of February.
So
And
even before the war started, actually. Okay. So it was the Ukrainian authority that contacted you and said we need help, or?
to put it simply, yes. To put
Okay.
it simply, yes.
Okay. It was more complicated than that, but we can sum it up like that, yeah?
In terms of communication, let's sum it up like that. It's easier to
Okay.
understand.
Okay.
And no, it has been, as I said, it has been activated previously as well for different crises like earthquakes, like floods, like the pandemic. But for Ukraine, this is actually the biggest ever UCP protection mechanism
All right.
operation to date. Also, it is the most complicated in terms of logistics because the assistance provided is like truly massive. Today, we have all 27 EU member states have offered assistance to Ukraine, plus also Turkey and Norway that are the participating states to the mechanism. So, in order to actually deliver this vast amount of assistance to Ukraine, we have established logistical hubs in Poland, Slovakia, and Romania, where all the like the aid can arrive. It can be organized there, and then it can be shipped directly to Ukraine. And actually, one of the perks of this EU civil protection mechanism in this crisis is that Ukraine has a single point of contact, which is well, us here in Brussels. And you know, you can imagine that when your country is in crisis, I mean, it's attacked by Russia, the all the authorities there are so overwhelmed, and like you wouldn't have the capacity to deal with individual requests. So the coordination part is actually super important. And I could also give you an example, for example, how the mechanism was used. For example, a few weeks ago, the EU coordinated a delivery of 45 fire trucks from Italy to Ukraine, which meant that Italy responded to the Ukraine's request for assistance by offering the 45 fire vehicles. Ukraine accepted this offer. Once the offer was accepted on the Ukrainian side, the vehicles were loaded on trains in Italy. They arrived in Slovakia. In Slovakia, the Ukrainian emergency state services came to Slovakia to that hub where they met with the Italian firefighters, who then introduced the equipment, the Italian equipment, to the Ukrainian counterparts. And once the handover was finished, the Ukrainians drove those vehicles to Ukraine.
Okay. Anna, I read that 30,000 tons of assistance have been sent to Ukraine. When we say assistance, what do we mean? What kind of assistance?
So when we talk about the EU civil protection mechanism, this is really in-kind assistance. It's like material assistance. It can range from everything. For example, we are providing life-saving supplies, literally food, medical supplies, but it can be more, even more like strategic equipment. For example, fire engines, ambulances,
Okay.
even mobile hospital. But honestly, it doesn't even stop there. We even provided the potato seedlings that were offered by France because the Ukrainian farmers needed support during the agricultural season. So
Okay.
it really can range, and but it's always in response to what Ukraine is asking from us as well.
Okay. Now I'm thinking of Ukrainians who are caught in the war in Ukraine, and I know that the EU is also providing emergency assistance to these Ukrainians in the country with another mechanism which is called RescEU. What is RescEU, and what does it
So
do?
RescEU is like another layer to the EU civil protection mechanism.
Uh-huh.
But instead of counting on the help of the EU member states to deliver this assistance, the European Commission has also established its own emergency reserves that can be deployed when a disaster strikes. This includes, for example, medical stockpiles that are hosted in various countries across the EU. And we actually, yes, have mobilized those stockpiles to provide emergency medical equipment to Ukraine. As you can imagine, the medical needs are really immense. And yeah, we have provided ventilators, oxygen generators, patient monitors, and also like protective equipment. But on top of those like medical stockpiles, we also have, for example, a medical evacuation airplane that has been also mobilized for the Ukraine crisis. This is our own rescue fleet. And for example, the plane is used to transfer Ukrainian patients to hospitals across Europe to receive care.
Okay, so these are medical evacuations that are organized through rescue. Yeah. And how many Ukrainian patients have you already transferred?
So to date, we have 335 Ukrainian patients that have been transferred to 11 European countries that have offered to take them in. These transfers they have been requested from Ukraine, from Poland, from Moldova, from Slovakia, because of course also the neighboring countries receiving a lot of refugees need support to take care of these patients, and sometimes they're chronically ill people who really need specialized medical care. And the hospitals can become overwhelmed, like in the neighboring countries. So, also through the EU Civil Protection Mechanism, we are trying to match the patients to the hospitals across Europe so they could receive the appropriate healthcare they actually need.
Okay, so it's not necessarily just wounded people. It can be cancer, people who have
Yes.
cancer, people who have, okay.
Yes, even psychological diseases.
Okay. Now, Anna, I also wanted to talk about the money. This is all I can imagine very expensive. All in all, how much the EU has spent until now for the Ukrainian population?
What we can definitely say is the amount the EU has pledged for Ukraine is truly massive. There are a lot of figures out there, so it can sometimes be a bit tricky to even like comprehend it. I think the main pledge was done by President von der Leyen at the Stand Up for Ukraine pledging conference. It was in the beginning of April, and the EU pledged 1 billion for Ukraine to support the Ukrainians. Both who have fled the country, but also the ones in there. I can tell you more about the humanitarian aid in particular. This budget is right now 243 million. Of this, 230 has been allocated for Ukraine and 13 for Moldova. And this is more than triple that was at first envisioned, because we have worked in Ukraine since 2014, actually, because we sometimes forget, but it was already a conflict zone in the eastern parts of the country, so people needed humanitarian aid. But now, of course, these humanitarian needs in the country have skyrocketed, and the funding has followed up.
Okay. Now, this is all done by Digi Echo, obviously. Digi Echo being the civil protection and humanitarian aid operations DG. You must be really at the forefront of all these efforts. So, how is Digi Echo managing all this? I mean, do you work around the clock?
This is really the most accurate way to describe the work of DG Echo. We truly do work around the clock. At the heart of DG Echo is the Emergency Response Coordination Center, and they work 24/7. So they have duty officers on duty even during night times. So there's always somebody there willing to respond to the emergency. And I mean, this is the only way in when you work in the crisis response. You have to. The disaster can strike at any moment, and you have to be available. But Echo also has boots on the ground, if I may put it like that. We have a EU civil protection team in Poland. They have been deployed there since beginning of March, and they're really there because the operation is so big. The countries have donated so much assistance to Ukraine. They're coordinating that everything gets shipped to Ukraine efficiently. On top of that, we also have a team of humanitarian experts, and they are actually in Ukraine. They are working hand in hand with our humanitarian partners to make sure that the aid gets there, gets to the people, even in the hard-to-reach areas, because I mean, the needs there are even more urgent. So we have people on the ground, we have people in Brussels, and it's a big operation, but we are working around the clock indeed.
Okay, yeah. And in Ukraine itself, where are they? Are they in Kiev, the
Yes.
people on the ground? Okay.
Yes. At first, they were based in Lviv, but they're also doing missions across Ukraine to Dnipro, to Vinnytsia, to other areas, just to assess the situation on the ground. So it's,
And
yeah, they're,
from, yeah, sorry.
yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was wondering from a security point of view. I mean, because obviously it's dangerous on the ground. How do they manage their security?
Well, it's not a first for DJ Echo to be deployed
Okay.
to places that are not the most secure
Yeah.
environments. We have missions across the globe, and there are a lot of countries, like actually the countries with the severest humanitarian needs tend to also be conflict zones. So we have very strict security measurements in place. The staff is always trained. And I mean, they are not taking unnecessary risks, but of course, the security is a very important element to bear in mind.
Okay. Well, Anna, I'm afraid we're getting to the end of today's show. Thank you again for sharing your insight of how the EU is helping Ukrainians. It's been super interesting. Thanks a lot to our listeners. We hope you enjoyed the show. And don't forget to send us your comments, ideas, and suggestions at dgt-radio@ec.europa.eu. Anna, thank you again.
Thank you.